The voice of Ethel Merman, sure to wake you up. That's for sure, especially on a really nice day like today. Hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us today. As you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station. Right here in Kansas City, the Christmas shows are coming at us hot and heavy now. Some really important ones to be talked about during the course of the program today, some traditional ones. In fact, the Kansas City Ballet has been doing the Nutcracker in one version or another for, we're going to guess, 35 to 40 years, something like that. It's been a nice long run with us to answer that question, hopefully, and tell us all about it. Devin Carney, the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet, and he brought along a man whose interview that we did previously for another show was so interesting, and you'll understand why when we get to it. Trad Burns is with us. He is the lighting designer who does the design of the lights for the Nutcracker, and his interview with us was so interesting. I didn't realize you were that meticulous with particular scenes, what the dancers were wearing, what the music was doing. This all affected what you did with the lights.
It's a lot of fun. It's fun to be able to really change what you look at
as an audience member with light.
Yeah. Sometimes I imagine it changes the whole mood of everything.
It does. You can definitely alter what the audience is thinking at the moment when they're watching what's going on stage.
And as Trad will tell us, the mood of what you're watching and what you're feeling as you're watching is often affected by the lights. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Devin Carney is the artistic director. How many years? I'm guessed over 35. Do you have a better guess than me?
I think it's around 43.
43, yeah. This is the second year with the new design. I mean, not that the old, you know, the old way of staging it was good. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. But I guess you felt the need to change over and do some things?
Right. It was time for a large update and one that would address the higher talent level of the dancers that were becoming part of the workforce for Kansas City Ballet. And, you know, the sets and costumes were showing their wear and tear. Mm-hmm. So all things combined, it was seemed like the right time to make a, you know, turn the page and create a brand new, very exciting, very modern, technically speaking, up-to-date version of Nutcracker, both choreographically, sets, costumes, and as you can, we'll hear more from Trad about his amazing lighting designs that lit all of those things I just mentioned.
Yeah, I will. What your challenge, and you, in our little pre-talk there, you were talking that even this morning, I guess on email or on the phone, you were working on something for another opera company where you'll be going after you leave here.
Right. It's, you know, one of the things about being a working designer is that we're constantly working, and, you know, we're, as a lighting designer, you know, I'm here for 10 days. And in the next 10 days, I have another project. And the next 10 days after that, I have another project. So we're constantly having to work ahead on what's coming up next. And one of the fortunate things, because this is the second year, the show was designed last year. So a lot of the hard work was done for last year's premiere, where we were here for nearly a month.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so now we're basically fixing all the mistakes that nobody else saw, little things that are more technical, that have more to do with how the show is now going to live for the next, you know, 5-10 years, to make it so that it's simpler to install. It's easier to put up each year. It takes less time, you know, so that, you know, we can continue to move on to other projects but keep the show quality exactly the same. Plus, there's a little bit of the fact that, you know, our eyes, as we grow older, as we see more things, continue to grow. And so there's certain parts as we're watching the show get remounted right now from a lighting standpoint that you notice and you're like, why didn't I see that last year? Mm-hmm. And then you find out that it wasn't there last year. Where you, you know, you see different things and you want the audience to see different things. You need to do things to make sure the show feels fresh, to the people that come back as a family tradition year after year.
Right.
You know, I was lucky enough as a kid to get to see the Nutcracker in my city that I grew up in almost every year. And you'd always notice something different, and I'd like to think that that's the designer's job, is to be able to be like, I never noticed that there was that thing going on over in the corner. So it's exciting to be able to come back and look at it really with a fresh eye. I haven't seen it for a year. And so you really start to see things and question sometimes why you made a choice that you made, and also be able to look at choices that you made that were really good choices, where you can say, I'm never touching this. I'm not going to touch this section. You know,
you probably do for some reason sometimes.
Sometimes, but you know, there's certain you have to make rules for yourself about what works and what doesn't work. And if something really works, you need to let it live in that you know, in the time period that you created. That's what made it special. And as an artist, you can't always go back and dab more paint on a painting that's finished. You know, sometimes you have to let something stay. But there are things that change choreographically, you know, as, you know, if in the future, as the dancers continue to grow, the Grand Pas de Deux will probably make some changes, which means that the lighting will probably have to change with it a little bit in order to accommodate what, you know, what new movement that they're doing in order to have it make sense.
Mm-hmm. I was just blown away by some of the things I remember you saying on our last visit. You even mentioned not only the colors of the costume, that would make sense, how many people were around them, that mattered.
Right.
And you also mentioned the height of the dancers mattered.
Right, it's true. There's a lot of things, you know, that really play into the design in the sense that we have to take into consideration. You know, if there's a big giant lift over stage and they're super high, we have to make sure they don't go into the dark as they do that. And so that's a little bit of addressing as choreography changes and develops and dancers change. You know, it's not the same dancers playing the role every show or every performance. And so sometimes in one performance, a dancer may be doing something that's slightly different than another dancer. And you have to sort of take all those things into an account when you know, are putting the design together. We also are up against a huge thing with technology changing. There's a lot of technology in the show. And lighting right now is going through a giant technology change incredibly fast with LED lighting. And even in your home, you can go to Home Depot and buy LED light bulbs that, you know, a year ago there were 8 kinds and now there are 40 kinds. Mm. And so, but that technology and the software that runs that is changing so quickly that it changes what our lights do from year to year, and so we have to be really aware of when there's a big technology upgrade that the lights we are still doing the same thing as they did before. And that's, you know, this is only the second year, so we don't have as much of this. I have other productions that have some of the same technology that have been running a little longer, in which we really have to pay a lot of attention to the technology because the computer upgrades have changed the way that those lights behave. Mm. That's the other part of the challenge of having to bring a show back every single year.
Oh, sure.
Same with dancers. You know, as dancers grow and change, technically things become, you know, you want to continue to challenge them. And so a dancer's a lot like a light. You have to spend a little extra time, you know. You have to spend time looking at it. Don't you think?
No.
No?
I don't
well,
think so.
But from a technical standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, a dancer is a human being, and, you know, it's not as simple as just updating the software. I think that a dancer goes through a much longer morphing type of process that takes hours and hours of constant training day in, day out, and rehearsal that really will codify perhaps a new step. So it's a very different process from, you know, the lighting to a dancer. You know, I would think so, but that's the challenge of being a choreographer. Okay. Is that it's a much larger, longer process to be able to develop a show. You know, Trad has the opportunity to go and go to different productions quite often, which is an amazing talent to be able to multitask that. I mean, he's never working on less than three or four productions simultaneously in his mind. I was asking him this morning, I have no idea how you do that. It'd be like me choreographing three full-length ballets all at the same time. But the difference is that, you know, we have humans that are dancers, and it takes weeks and weeks and weeks of choreographic time with the dancers and with the ballet staff to prepare them to go on stage. And that's something I think that will never change in this art form. You're always going to be dealing with human beings who can get tired and who need to have their rest as well as need to be trained properly. And that can take time. And it's kind of ageless. It's something that's been going on since the 1400s when dance first started. You know, it's irreplaceable, which is kind of interesting that technology is spinning so fast in trad's world and in costume and light and set designers' worlds, but you still have this constant of a dancer who needs to rehearse and prepare for the work at hand. And that's kind of an interesting sort of dichotomy between all these incredible design possibilities that are happening nowadays and dancers.
Right, but there's the other side of the fact that I have to keep up with that technology. So yeah. I'm constantly doing exactly what a dancer does, and I'm learning every day, having to learn something new about what that technology is doing. So it's, though I'm dealing with something that's a purely technical object, I'm still the other side, like a dancer, a human, where I'm constantly having to keep my knowledge up and re-educate myself at the same time as producing, you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and as far as the dancers are concerned, how much do you, of course, it's different dancers probably from last year. Not entirely, but.
Not entirely.
No. So, what, do you ask them to repeat themselves is not a fair term. Do you ask them to do different things or maybe try to stretch it a little? What's your philosophy there?
No, I mean, I have a certain vision of what the steps are, and those steps, I don't have an interest at this point. It's only the second year in changing most of those steps. So it's a matter of, anticipating and expecting the dancers to come up to the challenge at hand and do the work artistically as well as, of course, just pure technically as best as they can. And, you know, that's one of the reasons the way I choreograph the work is so that it is challenging to the dancers, because, you know, Nutcracker, you know, this isn't my first rodeo. I've been doing Nutcracker for over 40 years, both as a performer as well as being on artistic staffs. You know, Nutcracker can get a little bit of tedious, would be a word. You know, dancers can fall into kind of a doldrum during Nutcracker because it's the closest thing to a Broadway show that a classical ballet dancer does. You know, Broadway shows can last years, right? And so you have to figure out ways to keep it new and fresh, like Trad was saying, with the lights. And for a dancer, you know, keeping it new and fresh is quite important, because if you don't, then it affects what the audience will see. So choreographically, I tried to make the steps challenging enough that there's always something they can aspire to in each performance to make better. Mm. Choreographically, I didn't really change too much since last year. It really hasn't been much. I mean, last night I changed one step in the Russian dance, because like Trad was saying, you know, there are things that so much happens when you create a world premiere ballet, full-length ballet. There's such a whirlwind of activity going on to get the show on the stage that some things you turn to 10 months, 11 months later and you go, well, why did I do that? And, you know, it's kind of refreshing to see it from new eyes, because, you know, it's been a while since I've been with it. And I think, well, okay, well, let's fix that to make that better. And so that's what, you know, and like Trad said, there are some things you just don't mess with, because if it's not broken, why do you want to try and fix it, you know? And that's the beauty of bringing together a team of world-class designers between Holly Hines, our costume designer, and Alain Baez, the set designer, and then Trad, who we're fortunate that he can come back each year and continue to update and tweak and refine what we're all going to see, both in the terms of the costume sets and choreography. So it's really fortunate that Trad is able to come back and be with us again, because it really will keep upping the ante for the quality level of the production. But, you know, Michael, I will say that the team that was created this ballet is, you can't get much better. It really is a world-class group of designers that have come to Kansas City to join me, and I'm extremely grateful for that. And I believe that Kansas City will be able to enjoy the fruits of that labor for decades to come because of the quality level that was brought here to create this production.
Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, as the designer that gets to come back every year, you know, Holly and Alon will not be here every year. It's my job also to keep their things at best interest.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's my, as the lighting designer, it's important for me to make sure that their work is showcased in the fashion in which they want it to be showcased. And so, you know, I'll spend time with the director of production, who's really fabulous here, Amy Taylor, about things like, can we do something to help fix this drop that, you know, is it stored over the course of, you know, almost a year, it spends in a box. Making sure that the sets look as good as they do and, you know, costume-wise, that the costumes still look fresh as time goes on. You know, things age, especially, you know, costumes and scenery that get used every year and, you know, that sort of stuff adds wear and tear every time you put it in the air. It, you know, or put it on a dancer, a costume, it gets a little wear and tear. So it's my job to make sure that the lights evolve a little bit to help the scenery look as clean and fresh as it did in the very beginning.
Yes, sir. And it's a demanding schedule, much more so than your usual shows run. For instance, the show opens on, I guess it's Saturday, December the 3rd, and runs through the 24th.
Right.
For how many performances a week usually?
Well, we won't do more than 8.
Okay. Very demanding. Much
yeah,
Do most of your shows have around 8 performances, something like that?
No. Nutcracker, it's an extremely popular production all over the country, and you know, it is a family holiday tradition. And, you know, Trad was saying, even before he was in theater, he was going as a child to the Nutcracker. You know, it's just so synonymous with the holidays in America that there's a Nutcracker in a city. No other production we do does that many shows over that many weeks. Now, we will do... for instance, we'll be doing Sleeping Beauty in the early spring, in March, and that will do a total of 9 shows over 2 weeks. But Nutcracker is pretty much the only time of year that you really are pushing out, you know, 6 to 7 shows a week. And, you know, we're doing 26 shows between... We have 2 student matinees before we open on the 3rd, so we're actually performing the 1st through the 24th, 26 shows. So, you know, you do your math on that, that's more than, if you wanted to average it out, that's more than 1 show every day.
Yeah. So most of the run, are they on fixed dates? There's probably always shows on Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, for sure.
And during the week, it would be in the evening, like Tuesday through Friday, but not every single night of the week.
No. So that means we're doing double headers, matinee evenings on, say, Friday matinee. We might do a student matinee, and then we do a Friday night, and then we do 2 Saturday, 2 Sunday.
Yeah. The best way to find that out, to get the exact schedule, go to their website, kcballet.org, and the number you can call as well is 816-931-8993. We're speaking with Devin Carney, the artistic director, and Trad Burns, the lighting designer of The Nutcracker in its perhaps 40th year in Kansas City, off and on. That's a long time, and it's been as best... You told me earlier, perhaps this is maybe the 3rd different version?
Yes, right.
There was one even before the one that ran for...
Correct, right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's gone on for a long time. It's become a tradition.
Absolutely.
This is the 2nd year with the new choreography, I guess,
and
you could say.
Yeah, well, it's a completely reimagined production. I mean, the story's still there, but everything else about it is absolutely brand new.
What if you gave credit to your costume designer?
Holly Hines.
Holly.
Tell me about her challenges, especially last year.
Well, I mean, let's talk about, first of all, how many roles are in the production, for starters. When a costume designer is being approached, the first question out of Holly's, thought process was, how many roles do the children do? I gave her a list, and, it's 106 individual costumes for the children, and it's over 89, it's actually exactly 89 costumes for our company dancers. So that's a significant number of designs, drawings that have to be realized and, conceptually put out there on, what might start as a napkin, But, eventually it fleshes itself out to a full-blown, full-color rendering of a single costume. Mm-hmm. And then the swatching has to be designed, developed as swatching. In other words, you have to go to material stores and choose the patterns you're going to use, the material and the pattern, and then you have to balance that against your budgetary constraints, because there's gossamer silk that can cost, and I'm not exaggerating, $120 a yard, right. Or you can pick polyester, which is $15 a yard,
And there's a huge difference between how silk and polyester look.
Yeah. Incredibly totally different. Yeah, Trad's like, that's polyester. Right.
Does the silk shine more?
It takes light in a very different fashion. It does shine more, but it also, absorbs light in a different way.
And it shows movement in a much more beautiful way, but that costs money. So these are things that Holly, she's a seasoned professional, Michael. I mean, she's been doing it for the Paris Opera, for New York City Ballet. She was one of their costume designers, worked with them for decades. Has done things for the Kirov, for San Francisco Ballet, for Boston Ballet, Houston Ballet, Pacific Northwest Ballet. If they're a major company in the world, she's designed for them. And those are the designs we get here in Kansas City. So she understands budgetary constraints, and she knows how to make it the best it can, given the amount of money that's available to her. But it's a big challenge to design that many costumes. And then, of course, there's a timetable, and there are builders that are necessary. You can't, just make up designs. That you've got to have trusted people who can actually produce the designs and construct them. And we had 20 some odd different shops, and that may be somebody in their basement, or it might be a full-blown costume shop in the seventh floor of some garment in the garment district in New York City, and anything in between, building various parts of our production to her specifications. And the same holds true with the set design, the exact same, all the same things I just mentioned Alain Vaez has to deal with in terms of, construction. Who's going to construct the things that you design, and who's going to paint the things? Do you trust the painters? Because, they're artists. The folks who, actually are the ones who paint what Alain chooses to create. I mean, you're transferring something from, an 11 by 17... inch design to a 30 by 60 foot mural, okay? And that's, scale-wise, and I'm sure you can speak more to that, Trad, about
that scale transition. You can draw something on a piece of paper, but you can't just blow it up. You have to have somebody who can artistically take that drawing that's a small scale and make it feel the same when it's big. That's a definite... Yeah. A huge talent. Not just any painter can sit down. You can be a great painter on a piece of canvas that's 24 by 36, but ask that same painter to paint that same thing 30 by 60. It's a really big challenge.
Oh, I bet so.
And it's also interesting, we've had some things, like everything gets a little bit of an update. Lighting-wise, we fix mistakes. We change color that didn't quite work the first time through. And even scenically, there are some pieces of scenery that have had some pretty major paintwork where, from an audience standpoint, I don't think you would know at all, but it was just those little bits of detail that we all pay attention to as artists that was really important for us to have those things fixed and cleaned up so that our true vision about what we were trying to communicate was really going to be there.
Yeah, I think you understand now all that goes into this.
We were just scratching the surface.
Yeah, it's just a small part.
I can imagine so. The show opens, of course, on December the 3rd, although Devin said that there were previews. Can the public go to the previews?
Those are for schools. Those are actually sold out, okay. So there wouldn't even be an opportunity to get into those.
Performances then open December the 3rd and run through the 24th, not every day, so you need to check the schedule. And the best way to do that is go to kcballet.org and or the phone number. You can call them there, 816-931-8993, and find out what particular performance would best suit you if you were interested in doing something like that. But I'm glad all of you had a chance to share in this. It's amazing, really, all of the detail that goes into it. He mentioned the material of the clothing affected the kind of light he's going to use, whether he puts it on a dimmer, whether he does a particular gel.
Correct.
I could ask you about gels and mood and all of that, but we don't have the time. But I'm sure that all factors in.
It does, definitely.
Yeah, and the color of the show, I mean, you can have fabulous set and costume designs, but if you don't have a lighting designer who's sensitive to what the vision is, like Trav was saying, of those artists, and you put the wrong color on it, it can completely alter the designs. Mm-hmm. And it can completely alter the visual for the choreography as well. So, you know, trad's art form is an invisible art form that everybody actually sees. Mm-hmm. And it's a gorgeous art form, which I value highly.
Yeah, the Nutcracker, a Kansas City tradition. December 3rd through the 24th. The number to call, 816-931-8993, or online at kcballet.org. I want to thank both of you for coming once again.
Thank you.
Always interesting to get into what goes on behind. Now, I realize not everyone's interested in that, but I know
how much
changes and how all of that affects. So I thank you both for that. Devin Carney, the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet, and Trad Burns, the lighting designer for the Nutcracker. He's, I guess, soon he'll be going to Hawaii.
True. That's my next Hawaii.
I'm so sorry for him, too.
Yeah, 14 hours a day in a dark theater.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
While in the middle of paradise.
Can you imagine the ballet with a Hawaiian twist? And yes, it has a Hawaiian twist. We don't have more time to talk about that.
That's very true.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For being with us. We're going to take a brief break. When we return, much more to tell you about. It's getting busy in the holiday season. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're expecting people from the Kansas City Repertory Theater. They have two shows, actually, to be talking about, probably maybe held up in traffic. I know it gets a little busy out there. But they are doing their 36th annual version of the Christmas Carol over at the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC. It has already opened and will run through December 24th, and they are also at the same time doing a show over at their other facility, the first one being on the campus at the Spencer Theater, this one being downtown at the H&R Block Center down there, the Copacan Theater it's called. Then down there they're doing the Santa Land Diaries. That will run December 8th through the 24th, and we anxiously await their arrival. But until they get here, for a few minutes anyway, Devin Carney, the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet, is with us, along with Trad Burns, the lighting designer for the show The Nutcracker. But Trad does a number of shows. Well, I kind of touched on it a little bit around the country, and I was especially intrigued, even though it's the same show, how different they can be. You told me a little bit about the version that they were going to be doing in Hawaii, and it has a Hawaiian twist to the story.
It's, yes. So, you know, every Nutcracker is a little bit different. And so I'm fortunate enough that I have three Nutcrackers in my repertory currently running. And this year I have a brand new one that's being done by Ballet Hawaii, choreographed by Septim Weber. Kansas City audiences are familiar with Septim. His production of Alice in Wonderland, which was here two seasons ago, is who is the choreographer for this version that we're doing on Oahu. It is set in 1859 Hawaii, which is an interesting time in the Hawaiian island history. And so he's using things that were going on in that Hawaiian island history, as well as a lot of Hawaiian lore and folk tales and native tales, and sort of weaving it into this Nutcracker. And so it's really fun. It's fun as a designer to be able to have that challenge of being able to look at something that you know incredibly well. You know, I've been lighting Nutcrackers for over 30 years, and look at it with a different eye and a different fresh eye. It allows you, when you go back to visit ones that you've done before, to really look at something in a very clear headspace, because you've got other versions floating around and everything is new. And so you kind of look at, you know, it really lets you look at something different. And so we're get to tell the story, especially in the second act with the divertissements of things being slightly different. Instead of Russian, they're Hawaiian warriors.
Sure.
Instead of Spanish, they're orchid flowers. And things that will relate to the audience in which, you know, they're performing for, in the same sort of way that Kansas City's does. And, you know, there are many different versions of Nutcracker throughout the country, and, you know, not the choreography isn't the same. And how they tell the story is not exactly the same. The story is pretty much the same, but how they tell it, you know, is each choreographer's own take. And it's fun as an artist to be able to sit back and look at it in a different way. And even Alon and Holly, the costume and scenic designer who did this one, they start today technical rehearsals in Charlotte for a brand new Nutcracker that they're doing again together in Charlotte. That is yet another take on a Nutcracker. So as a designer, it's really great fun to be able to explore other things within the same sort of story. You can relate it a lot like a play as a designer or as an actor. You know, you may be in A Christmas Carol and you may be doing it here in Kansas City, and next year you're doing it in St. Louis. And though it's the same story, it's a little bit different. You know, you get to really sort of reinvent yourself, which is really fun.
Yeah.
And keeps it fresh, keeps it something that you want to do every year.
Well, but so, now is the fable, because the story is really based on a fable, really. Is it a different fable in the Hawaiian version?
It is pretty much the same story. There's a little bit of a difference in the sense that Drosselmeyer, the story goes in the first act in this version, is set in the what is now the Governor's Mansion, Hawaii, which was built in the 1840s. And so the house, after her husband, who was a sea captain, was lost at sea, she basically made her mansion a place for people to come and visit, sort of like a hostel or bed and breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is that Drosselmeyer is a guest in the bed and breakfast is the only sort of little bit of a change that happens in the party scene. But it's still the same story of Clara and, you know, her imagination and going off, very similar to Kansas City's and other versions. It just has a little bit of the Hawaiian theme on top of it.
Yeah, well, I assume then the costuming is going to be different.
Costume is different, and it is in, you know, every production. You know, every one has something that's a little bit different, so you have to think about it in a different way. And we have lots of great technology now, especially with LED light, which makes that a lot easier to help us light all the different costumes and the different scenery. That technology is crazy of what has happened with the use of all of that LED light and things. In the last 5 years, lighting has moved further than it has in the previous 30 years.
Mm.
And you could even say even further than that. You know, lighting basically went from candle to being electric light. And the changes other than changes about how that light is delivered and becoming slightly more efficient was certainly not as massive as a change as what the LED light bulb has done. You know, there are LED lights now that allow us to make millions upon millions of color, when in the past we had to rely on one piece of gel to make one light that color. Now we have one light that can do millions of colors. And that technology and that understanding of that technology and how to use it is really been a great challenge, and spending a lot of time educating yourselves. It doesn't work the same way as an incandescent light bulb does. It doesn't fade up and out the same way. You know, if you have a dimmer in your house and it's on at full, all the way turned up, the light is pretty clean and pretty white. But as you start to turn it down, it starts to turn warmer. And LED light doesn't do that. There isn't that sort of sense. And so how our eyes see things and have seen things for decades is changed a little bit. And so as a designer, you sort of have to start to adapt. You have to sort of slide yourself into that. You know, audiences have a way of seeing things, and we're lucky that everybody has LED television screens at home, and, you know, movies are projected digitally. And so we've been able to sort of let, as our eyes as people in the world have adjusted to the technology that's around us. You know, in the theater, we've also had to adjust the way that we look at stuff. And we don't think about things in the same kind of fashion. You know, we don't think about how things fade out in the same way because of that technology. Mm-hmm. It's changed the way that lighting works, actually, and how the audience sees it.
Go ahead. I was going to say, you know, I remember as a performer, when we would, you know, before the curtain would go up, you would have the crew would be going along all the lights along the sides, trees, they're called, in the wings, where all the lights are held up. And they'd be putting in gels on every single light, and guys would be up on ladders, climbing up a ladder, and changing the gel and making sure it's right. And then we'd do one ballet, say doing a mixed rep, and then, you know, the curtain would come down, and those guys were up on those ladders, like, instantly, with a pause between two ballets, and they were changing gels like crazy. And the cool thing now, it just boggles my mind how much more efficient it is now that what Trad's got at his disposal with these LED lights. That, I mean, they limitless color changes in one unit. Mm-hmm. There's no gel.
Changes in the Nutcracker now. That's and amazing. There are a ton of different colors that everything is. And so you have to learn how to, you know, we've always mixed color to make, you know, if you take in light, you take red and green and blue primary colors, and you mix them all, turn them on, it turns into white. That's just what happens with light. But we now are mixing color in a different way, in the sense that we've got these lights, LED lights, that can give us lots of saturation. And so the things that are still gel, there's still lots of incandescent, something that isn't going to be able to go away, that sort of pure white light. Mm-hmm. But we've adjusted the colors that we use in that in order to mix with the LED technology, so that we don't have to do all these massive color changes.
Now, is white is, I know this, but it's escaped me. So, and I'm sure you know. White is the absence of any color?
White is actually all the colors on top of each other.
Okay.
So white is primary and light, primary red, primary blue, and primary green combined together to make white. That makes the full spectrum. And red and green together make yellow. And, of course, blue and pink together make, or blue and red together make pink. But the reality is it's really minus green. You're just taking green out of that mix. And blue and green together make teal. And so there's a lot of that. And we have different versions of, you know, we have some LEDs that have seven colors in them. And we have some lights that are mixed with three colors that are not red, blue, and green. There's cyan, yellow, and magenta. You mix those colors together to make all of your colors. Mm. So you have to really, you know, there is a lot of, you're constantly doing your homework on the new technology and how it works. And, you know, we used to really think about stuff. There are four manufacturers that make gel. That's the piece of plastic that changes the color of light. There are, and there are hundreds of colors in each of those manufacturers' books, and they all have names and numbers. But now we're really thinking about color, at least I am, in the idea about hue and saturation, instead of by, you know, I love this blue, it's my favorite blue, it's called Lee 715, it's Cabana Blue. But now, you know, I know it's 247.65 hue, and the saturation is 93.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you start thinking about color that way instead of by just a manufacturer. And if there's something that where the color isn't quite perfect, you can tweak it. The last production we did, Midsummer Night's Dream, after our first dress rehearsal, I spent the hour while they were giving dancers notes after we did our first dress rehearsal run on stage, taking a blue color and tweaking the hue and saturation value by 0.25%, one direction and another, until I found exactly the right perfect color that I wanted. And in the past, with gel, we couldn't do that. We had to live with what we had or take the time, which we have very little of, to change all of those gels to something else, right, hoping that that second choice is going to be more perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so that technology has really let us as artists really exactly mix the color of paint, so to speak, that will work for, you know, what you're doing. And there are little things like, you know, yesterday we made small little changes in the Nutcracker here, about just a little color change here and there based upon how my eyes see things, how the set held up after the course of the year, you know.
Wow. It's amazing to me, all the things that you can do and how it affects the show and the mood and all that. I'm going to assume that the Hawaiian version, for instance, would have more green and more pink because of the orchids, and that affects, do you want the green to have more light on it?
Right, yeah, it's also like, you know, do you want the green to be more blue-green or more red-green?
Because
that's the sort of, you know, there's a wide variety of that sort of stuff. And yeah, and so there is a, you know, I'll develop a color board, basically, of the colors that I think that the light should live in relationship to the costumes and the scenery. I did that on this Nutcracker. It's a very small world of color. Even though there's a ton of color in the show, a lot of it is made by putting multiple colors together. And so, yeah, you do. You start to lay all that sort of stuff out. You know, the idea about the second act in the Hawaiian version has a Hawaiian sunset sky in the back that will change for each of the diverts. So it's a bunch of clouds and water that is basically being painted in grayscale, no color to it. And light is what will change all of the color. And so, you know, that doing a lot of research, I've spent a lot of time looking at a ton of people's Instagram photos of their Hawaiian vacations and their sunsets. Because every time, depending upon what time of year it is, if there's a storm out, you know, somewhere in the ocean somewhere, or how warm it is, how hot it is, how humid it is, changes the color of the sunset. And so, you know, I have to come up with 9 different sunsets, spectacular sunsets, and, you know, I have about 60 of them, of very different looking sunsets that are all taken in Hawaii, and many of them are taken from the same location, to use as a reference to create the art.
Yeah, now the performance here differs a lot from, probably not much, but the performance that you'll be doing in Cleveland?
Yeah, everything, you know, every show is different, and so, you know, but the basic ideas are that, you know, are basically the same. You know, last week I opened a Nutcracker at the Kennedy Center, which is a wildly different Nutcracker than, you know, any of the other Nutcrackers that I do. And it's fun. It's really great to be able to, you know, to go in and...
Well, a lot of pressure at the Kennedy Center.
Yeah, it was not so bad, though. I think everybody else was nervous, and it was just, for me, it was just another day at work.
Oh, God.
Which is great. It's nice, you know, when you get to be, I really am fortunate in the sense that my work is desired and people want to see it, and so, you know, it's really just another day at the office. It's just an office in a different city.
Oh, absolutely. Let me review one more time. Devin has to go. It's time for you to go now? Okay. We're going to let Devin and Trad go. The performances open on for the public on December the 3rd, and they run through the 24th. The number to call for information, 816-931-8993, or online at kcballet.org. For this year's edition of the Kansas City Tradition, the Nutcracker. And I want to thank you both for coming, for staying over for a few minutes. It's great of you to do that. Nice seeing you.
Thank you.
See you again soon.
All right. Take care.
It's amazing what all the colors. It opens a whole new world for you. You probably have always felt that way.
Yes, very true.
A lot of people don't. Thanks so much for being
here.
Thank you. You're welcome. Dred Burns, the lighting designer, and Devin Carney, the artistic director. Thanks so much for being here. We're going to mention for a few minutes the Kansas City Repertory Theater. They're doing their annual version of The Christmas Carol. It has already opened, actually. It opened on November the 18th and will be running through December the 4th. Also, a lot of performances squeezed into those 4 weeks. The number to call for more information is 816-235-2700, or you can go online to their website at kcrep.org. More information on The Christmas Carol. Every year, but I think one year, they didn't do The Christmas Carol. They did The Christmas Story that one year. But that also has become a holiday tradition. A lot of the same actors are in the show from year to year. Sometimes they change roles. always a lot of fun and always very interesting over there to do a lot of things. Now, at virtually the same time, although not entirely, on the Copacan stage. Now, that is the Rep's version that's downtown. It's actually in the H&R Block building downtown, right next door to the Power and Light District. The Copacan stage is there, and on the Copacan stage through the holidays, they'll be running the Santa Land Diaries. That's kind of a different show. It's a mischievous elf, let's say, and all he has to go through to get ready for Christmas. Just a little bit different take on the story. The Christmas Carol version being, you know, very much welcoming to children. You'll have to perhaps talk to them or talk to the child you're going to take about the Santa Land Diaries on that. But ask, find out, get all the information you want. The website to learn about Santa Land Diaries is the same. Both the Kansas City Repertory Theater website, it's kcrep.org, and the number you can call is 816-235-2700 to see Santa Land Diaries, which is on the Copacan stage. Some of the performances are the same nights as the Rep performance of The Christmas Carol, which will be in the Helen F. Spencer Theater for the Performing Arts on the campus of UMKC. They redid the building. In fact, it was ready for The Christmas Carol about a year ago for that, and they'll be doing the performances there as well. Brand new space if you haven't been in the last year. The lobby is all different. The interior of the theater is a little different as well. Lots of things going on for the Kansas City Repertory Theater and their annual productions. More productions for these particular shows than a usual run. It's even longer because of the holidays and, of course, the demand for tickets and all of that going on makes it for an interesting, very busy holiday season. Like I said, some of the same actors have been doing The Christmas Carol for many, many years. A few change over the years. Gary Neil Johnson still plays the role of Ebenezer Scrooge. I noticed they added some different twists in the show when they did it last year. Made it a little more dark in places, which is, par for the course, so to speak. You don't want to do the same thing from year to year. So they make little changes along the way. And, of course, you have your it's the same story. It's eerie music. Some special effects are a little different this year, probably more than there's been in the past. Some beautiful music, harp music, featuring the playing of Peggy Friesen, who also has roles in the show and has actually played different roles in the show over the years. That'd be going on the Kansas City Repertory Theater stage. The Christmas Carol, it's a long run, but I would still make inquiries if I were interested in that, because there is a lot of demand for seeing the shows. There's a lot of students from schools. Can you remember the first time you ever saw the show? Well, perhaps you've never seen the show. So in that case, you know, you might want to seriously consider this. Of course, it's you've seen different versions of the show. There's different movie versions of the show. All of the stage productions are not the same either. They often do different adaptations to do the stage show as well. But there's a George C. Scott version, an Alistair Slim version of the Christmas Carol. There's even a Mr. Magoo a la Jim Backus version of the Christmas Carol. I think that was the first one I saw when I was a small child, was the Jim Backus. back as Mr. Magoo version of the Christmas Story. But you'll be surprised at how well it fits in. But this version, the Kansas City Reps version, I would ask them if they were here about the different adaptations that have been done. Sometimes two different versions are combined, and that makes it very easy as well. So let's go over the vital information for them as well. On the stage of the Spencer Theater, on the campus of UMKC, show running now, not on Monday nights, of course, but again on Tuesday, running through December the 24th. The number to call for more information is 235-2700. Remember to attach that 816 there if you're on the Kansas side of the border. Or on the web at kcrep.org. The Santa Land Diaries will open on December the 8th and also run through the 24th. That number to call is the same. Just when you talk to them, tell them what show you're interested in. The number to call for that is 816-235-2700 or on the web at kcrep.org. Just a show today filled with traditional Kansas City shows, things that are going on all over town with shows, but particularly the traditional ones are the best way to see things. You know, it's a tradition, and you want to share in that. No matter what show you're interested in seeing, you want to consider that as well. So we've reached the end of our program today. Glad to have you with us. Special events here at KKFI going on over the holiday season. Go to our website, kkfi.org, for more information on that. And, boy, we sure love having you around. The response for the band auction was great. For our fun drives has been very, very good. And stay with us. We're going to be doing more and more impressive things in the near future with that, okay? So that's all we have for you today. The Jazz Insider is next. He's going to be playing some great jazz for you. Jazz from 1 to 3, and then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.